Good morning. My name is Matthew. Your pastor, Leah, invited me to speak to you this morning on this, the second Sunday after Christmas, Epiphany Sunday, to speak to you, that is, from the lectionary readings for this particular Sunday. I was with Leah and Chris in their kitchen about 1 month ago when I opened up the lectionary online to see precisely which gospel reading would be the one assigned for today. I was surprised to find that not one and not two, but three different gospel readings are suggested for today. Leah then said to me, "So which of these three readings would you like to speak on? I'll leave it entirely up to you." Well, after thinking about it and after praying about it, I've decided to read all three. I've decided to read all three of these gospel readings because I suddenly realized that these three readings represent virtually everything written in our New Testament scriptures about Jesus during his infancy and his childhood years. Whenever we encounter Jesus at any point throughout the rest of the New Testament scriptures, Jesus is already what in those times was considered to be middle-aged. So sit back now and listen to what has been passed down through generation after generation of Christians for over 2,000 years of almost everything that we know about baby Jesus and preteen boy Jesus. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, 'Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage.' When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. After the wise men had left, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, 'Get up, take the child and his mother, and flee to Egypt, and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him.' Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother by night, and went to Egypt, and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, 'Out of Egypt I have called my son.' When Herod died, an angel of the Lord suddenly appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, 'Get up, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who were seeking the child's life are dead.' Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was ruling over Judea in place of his father, Herod, he was afraid to go there. And after being warned in a dream, he went away to the district of Galilee. There he made his home in a town called Nazareth, so that what had been spoken through the prophets might be fulfilled: He will be called a Nazarene. The parents of Jesus went to Jerusalem every year for the festival of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up as usual for the festival. When the festival was ended and they started to return, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but his parents did not know it. Assuming that he was in the group of travelers, they went a day's journey. Then they started to look for him among their relatives and friends. When they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem to search for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Child, why have you treated us like this? Look, your father and I have been searching for you in great anxiety." He said to them, "Why were you searching for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he said to them. Then he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was obedient to them. His mother treasured all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in years and in divine and human favor. This is the gospel of the Lord. Good morning. As I said a few minutes ago, my name is Matthew. Your pastor, Leah, invited me to speak to you this morning. And so I would like to say, first of all, that I am not a formally trained theologian, nor am I a formally ordained minister. I am simply, and hopefully humbly, a lifelong, devout, very ecumenical, church-going Christian. That is, I'm a lifelong believer in and follower of Jesus Christ and his beautiful, wonderful, and radical gospel teachings. And I am also a Christian who has experienced something that most people would never want to experience themselves firsthand. That is, the nightmarish experience of being rendered homeless and being kept homeless on the streets of a large city for a very long time. Several decades ago, someone said to me, "If you ever get invited to speak to a group of people, you should not decline the offer. For being so invited is actually one of the greatest honors a person can have bestowed upon him or her. It means that someone thinks that you have something important to say, that you have something worth being given a hearing. So you should accept the offer and speak your mind and say your piece." Of course, this does not mean that your audience will necessarily like or even agree with what you say. For it is possible that they may very well not do so. Just remember, Reverend William Lloyd Garrison of Boston's famous Park Street Congregational Church once spoke up in favor of the abolition of slavery and the right of women to vote, and he ended up being chased down Tremont Street by an angry mob hell-bent on lynching him. I really don't have all that much time to speak to you here this morning, so I will try to say as much as I can, as quickly as I'm able. My life and your pastor Leah's life first crossed paths about 15 years ago. Back then, Leah was a 20-year-old Wellesley College sophomore who used to attend Sunday worship services at Wellesley Congregational Church in Wellesley Square. While back then, I was in my 8th year of being homeless on the streets of Boston. During those years, I wished that earlier in my life I had learned to play a musical instrument that I could play in the T subway stations, because I saw how much pocket money those who were homeless and who also happened to be able to play an instrument were able to make as street musicians after just a few hours of playing their instruments in the subways. But my talent was more in the area of the visual arts rather than the musical arts. And trying to sell some piece of visual art was never anywhere near as lucrative as playing music. But eventually I helped get an art program for the homeless up and running. And to this day, approximately 20 years later, that program, Common Art, is thriving, helping countless homeless people, as well as countless housed people who volunteer to help out at Common Art. Well, in 2004, the homeless artists from Common Cathedral and Common Art happened to have an art show at Wellesley Congregational Church. And while most of the parishioners there at that time appeared to be either gray-haired middle-aged folks or white-haired elderly folks, I couldn't help but notice that there was this one tall and slender, bright-eyed, blondish-haired 20-year-old young woman who happened to walk over to my art display, who stood out in stark contrast with all the other much older-looking people. That, of course, was Leah, and that, of course, was how she and I first met. As I said earlier, I don't have much time to speak to you this morning, but in less than 10 days, I'll be back here to give my full 90-minute-long presentation on homelessness and the gospel. So since I hope you will all come to that Connect event next Tuesday evening, January 14th, then what I say to you today can, in a sense, serve as coming attractions, so to speak. So for several weeks now, I've been trying to figure out exactly what I can and should say to you today to try to hook you in, to grab your attention, to help to make you sit up straight, lean forward, and really want to hear what I have to say to you. And then I thought, but why? Why should any of you care? I mean, really, why should any of you care to hear what I, a homeless man, have to say to you? After all, most people don't care. In fact, most people couldn't care less about what a homeless person may have to say. So why should any of you? And the answer that comes to me anytime I hear myself ask those questions is, because Jesus was homeless, because Jesus was in need of refuge, shelter, and sanctuary at various times throughout his life, and because, presumably, all of you here this morning, each of us, true Christians, we are worshiping a homeless man as our God. Anytime that you see a homeless man on the street begging for some money or sitting across the aisle from you on a city bus dressed in ragged clothes or sleeping on a park bench while it's cold and drizzling outside, and you do nothing to help that person, you're doing the same thing to Jesus. For as Jesus once said, whatever you do to the least of my brothers and sisters, you do to me. Homelessness here in the United States, a country as wealthy in resources as this one is a national disgrace. But for those of us who claim to be Christians, homelessness is an ecclesiastical scandal, for precisely the reason that I've just stated, because of the fact that as Christians, we are all worshiping a homeless man as our Lord and our God. Therefore, every church should be open, not only as a place of worship on Sunday mornings, but also as a place of refuge, shelter, and sanctuary for anyone that may be in need of such. When I first became homeless, I thought to myself, as I prayed to God, the following question. Where can I go now that I have been evicted from my apartment in which I lived in the city of Boston for over 15 years, and now that I have nowhere to lay my head each night? Where in this world can I, or any homeless person, go for safety and protection against the elements and against the violence that exists out on the streets? And the answer that came to me was this last of the three gospel readings that I just read to you this morning, the one from Luke, the only story that we have of Jesus as a boy. For 3 days, the boy Jesus had been homeless in the sense that he had nowhere to lay his head each night as he was in need of refuge, shelter, and sanctuary. And so where did he go? And where had his frantic, worried parents find him? The boy Jesus was found in the temple, that is, in God's house here on earth, in the house of the Lord. And those doors were not locked. Jesus was found in there, and he wasn't faint from exhaustion, nor starving from hunger, nor dying of thirst. He was perfectly fine. That means that he had been given hospitality, refuge, shelter, sanctuary. And the famous answer that he gave to his worried parents was, "Why were you searching for me? Did you not know that I must be in my Father's house?" Well, when I first became homeless, my parents were still alive. And they, like most parents who have a grown child who has sadly and tragically been rendered homeless, were very worried about me. So just think for a minute. If a child of yours were to ever become homeless, think of how worried you might be for your child's safety. Wouldn't you be wondering, where is he or she tonight? How is he or she staying warm and dry during this cold and wet winter? Did he or she manage to get a bed in a homeless shelter tonight? Or was there no vacancy once again, and so he or she has been left to sleep outside on some park bench, exposed to the cold or the rain or the heat and humidity of summer, vulnerable to all the potential violence out on the streets? Imagine you are the parent of a child that you had baptized right here in this very church. And imagine that your child grew to be 19 or 20 years old and that somehow he or she became homeless. Wouldn't you want and wouldn't you even expect that your pastor, Leah, for instance, would welcome your now adult child into this church with open arms and give him or her hospitality, allowing him or her to take refuge here, at least temporarily until some other arrangement could be made? Well, if Leah were to do that, she would be quite the exception. For I can tell you, based on decades of firsthand experience, that virtually no pastor of any church, of any denomination, does that today. I suspect that they're taught not to do so. Instead, any homeless person that would even so much as attempt to take refuge inside a church today would almost certainly find that the police would be called into the situation and they would be forcibly removed from the church, if not also placed under arrest and charged with trespassing. That is so wrong. That is so unjust. That is so unchristian. In the early church, hospitality, which always included welcoming the stranger in by providing him or her with refuge, shelter, and sanctuary, was central to the Christian identity. When I was growing up, churches were open all the time. But during the 1960s, things started to change. That's when churches started being locked up, and it all happened slowly, in small, incremental steps, so that by the time most people started to realize what was happening, it was too late. And as the subsequent decades passed, everyone just got used to the fact that the churches were now going to be locked up so much of the time. I believe there is something worse than injustice, and that is getting used to injustice, becoming apathetic, accepting injustice, and then finally becoming part of the problem and indeed becoming a perpetrator of the injustice. And that is what I see as having happened over the course of the last 50 years. A few years ago, I came across a quote that as soon as I heard it, it just resonated with me. It just instantly rang true. The quote is by someone named Jiddu Krishnamurti, And the quote is this: "It is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a profoundly sick society." I believe that we are at a time in history when we are living in a profoundly sick society. I believe that Germany, at the time when Hitler was coming to power around the 1920s and 30s, was a profoundly sick society. And I believe that Judea, at the time of King Herod, Archelaus, Herod Antipas, and Pontius Pilate, back when Jesus walked the earth, was also a profoundly sick society. One of the characteristics of such a society is inequality of a degree that is obscene. Whenever a relatively small number of people get hold of and control a disproportionate amount of the money and power in a society or in the world, then all sorts of societal ills will emerge. When any society gets like that is too crazy, too out of control, too sick, they seem to reach a breaking point, a point where more and more people begin to realize that something drastic, something radical needs to happen. They seem to realize that someone, with a capital S, has to step in and say enough. Someone, with a capital S, has to intervene. Of course, I'm speaking here of what happened on the original Christmas day. God did precisely that. God intervened. God ended up doing the most radical thing that any God could ever do. God stepped out of God's comfort zone, so to speak, out of God's heavenly realm, and came down to earth in the person of Jesus. God, the divine being, became a human being. God became incarnate, as we were taught to say in Sunday school. God became a human being who was as frail and as vulnerable and as helpless and as dependent as a human infant baby. And as such, God entered into this harsh, cold, cruel, violent, and dangerous world as a human baby who is in need of refuge, shelter, and sanctuary. Webster's dictionary defines the word refuge as safety and protection from danger and distress. And that is what baby Jesus needed from day one. That is, he needed a safe place in which to be able to learn and grow from infancy to adulthood. And sure enough, this fits perfectly with what is stated in the last verse from today's gospel reading. Jesus increased in wisdom and in years, and in divine and human favor. The last page of my sermon today is on my cell phone, so I'm going to continue. It's just a few minutes left. And so when Jesus had grown to adulthood and had begun his public ministry, what was it that he railed against more than anything else? It was economic injustices, issues regarding the inequality in society between the relatively few who were rich and the many who were poor. It was what the prophets of old referred to as hardness of heart and uncircumcised hearts. Jesus railed against the sort of person who would show no compassion toward the suffering of one's neighbor. Jesus often spoke out against the dangers that too much wealth poses to our spiritual health. That is, the dangers of the love of money, the love of power, greed. And Jesus' remedy for all of these things is simply this: we must share. It's okay to have money, but those who have must share with those who have not. Those to whom much has been given, much will be expected. What God was doing by becoming human was showing us through the person of Jesus what real wealth and real power is. God was showing us that if you truly wish to be wealthy, then live simply, like the lilies of the field and the birds of the air. In other words, live simply so that others may simply live. And there is more power in the hands of ordinary, lowly people who work together cooperatively than in corporations who work competitively. And of course, this is not to say that all competition is wrong, for there is such a thing as healthy competition, but there is also such a thing as unhealthy competition, or cutthroat corporate competition, of the sort where many of these corporations today end up placing greater value on increasing their profits than on the health and well-being of people and the planet. Once, when the disciples were apparently on some sort of power trip, where they seemed to be dreaming of the day when Jesus would finally establish his heavenly kingdom here on earth, and they would then become powerful rulers holding powerful positions in Jesus' kingdom, they asked, "Lord, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And Jesus called a child, whom he placed in their midst, and said, "Truly I tell you, unless you change and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever becomes humble like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me." And so who, of all people, has Time Magazine chosen to be 2019's Person of the Year? A child, the youngest person of the year ever, young Greta Thunberg, who was just 15 years old when she started protesting against the powerful government leaders in her native country of Sweden. By 16 years old, she had become a global sensation, leading and inspiring young people all around the world to join her in her protests as she spoke at the United Nations, where she told the world's leaders, "Shame on you." Greta is not the commander of an army or navy or air force, but boy, is she powerful. And just as I said at the beginning of my talk this morning, I am not a formally trained theologian nor a formally ordained minister. I don't have any academic degree but a high school diploma. I don't have any money to speak of. I have no house or apartment in which to live. I just travel around the country now giving my talks on homelessness and the gospel, trying to get churches to open their doors so as to be places of refuge, shelter, and sanctuary, as they are supposed to be. I've been giving these talks for 24 years now, and after the first 16 of those years, I believe that a miracle occurred. That is, a new kind of pope was elected in the Catholic Church, a pope who took the name of Francis for Francis of Assisi. And on December 9th, 2019, less than a month ago, Pope Francis opened up a church in the heart of the city of Rome, which is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's open so that anyone who might be homeless can go there. They can sit down, have a cup of coffee. They could fall asleep if they want. They could sit and talk with someone like a counselor. My next goal is to get a passport. I'd love to go there and visit that place. Eleven years ago, I made one of my works of art. I call it a homeless person's Christmas card. I have some downstairs and some other mosaics that I've made. If anyone wanted to purchase any or make a donation, they're down there. But on the back, I wrote some of the quotes that I've heard from Pope Francis. He says, "Our church doors should always be open, so that if someone moved by the Spirit comes there looking for God, he or she will not find a closed door. The church must be open and welcoming, whatever the costs. The church must be a house with open doors, a refuge for sinners, a home for people living on the streets, a place of loving care for the sick, a camp for the young. I never know how to end my sermons. I don't know what to say. I just am grateful that I've been asked to speak, and I'm thankful that you've listened. Thank you.
And all who heard him were amazed. Amazed. May this be true for us as well, that we might go out from this sanctuary today and live our lives in ways big and small that amaze those around us. That we live, as Matthew has said, in a way that means we are not getting used to injustice. That we remember that God is indeed with us now and always, and that we can build the kingdom of heaven here on earth. Amen.